This episode of No Quarter is sponsored by the Underground Retrocade. You love these games, and the way you want to play them is on the original cabinets. You want to see the side art, you want to feel the controls, and you want to hear Van Halen on the stereo. When you want to play real arcade games, you don't have to go all the way to Panama. You can go right to Chicago and play them in the Underground Retrocade. 121 West Main Street, West Dundee, Illinois.
I'm Mike McGinnis.
And I'm Rob O'Hara.
And this is No Quarter, a weekly podcast, blah, 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 blah. How are you, Rob?
I'm blah, blah, blah. How are you?
Same. Get the feedback.
We do have feedback. What do we have this week?
Yeah, we got a couple.
We got a message from Michael D'Angelo on the Facebook page. This is about Crazy Kong, last week's crazy, there was a Nickelodeon, I don't know who it was, but this video that my kids used to watch all the time called Crazy Car, and it would go, Crazy Car, and so I've been singing that Crazy Kong to that all week. My kids are like, what are you listening to? I'm like, go away. I hate when the kid shows infect my brain. Michael D'Angelo, he says he remembers playing Crazy Kong in the arcades that he used to go to, and it was in the back room of some video store. And at the time, he was a kid and didn't really notice all the bugs in the game, but he liked it because the Pie Factory level was the second level.
Yeah.
And in original Donkey Kong, he always had a hard time getting to that level. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think this is, I think the Japanese version of Donkey Kong, the levels go in the same order that they go in Crazy Kong.
Yeah, the Crazy Kong Part 2, I think, is the Japanese, or maybe it's the other way around. But, yeah, there's one of those versions of the games where it's closer to Donkey Kong in that the girders are the proper red instead of that weird green yellow color. But I mean, it's still got plenty of bugs and weirdness of its own. So
that game has got bugs. It's got and craziness.
This week is just crazy though.
Yeah. This is crazy without the no Kong, just crazy. And I got an email from Robert Elkin, who is from North Dakota. He says he's lived in Fargo most of his life. And, I talked about how we went on our road trip, our family vacation. Yeah. We went up there. And he talked about what a nice place Fargo is, which that's good. He talked about the Space Aliens Bar and Grill. I don't know if I mentioned that on the show, but we right next to the visitor center where the wood chipper was, there was a giant restaurant with a UFO on it and painted like all kinds of crazy purple and red and blue and aliens on top of it. And it said Space Aliens Grill and Bar. And I'm like, oh yeah, we're eating there for dinner.
That's awesome.
And we went inside and it was just filled with UFO memorabilia and aliens and newspaper clippings, on the walls and stuff. And they had a little space themed arcade. I was like, Mommy, can I stay here for a long time? Because I'm a sucker for anything that's like that. We went to Roswell, New Mexico years ago, probably 5 years ago, on a road trip, just driving through, and went to the Area 51, the Roswell Museum, and right, they have all the goofy alien stuff or whatever. I love that stuff. But
me too. Yeah.
Robert says he grew up in the arcades, hanging out in arcades like a lot of us, but he never owned any of the machines. So it's interesting to hear us talk about the old games and stuff. And he also says, and this is funny that he also mentions this, he played Crazy Kong at one of the convenience stores back in the day. It was at the back of the store next to a Kix cabinet. He says, I found it strange how the graphics were different colors and the sounds were almost scary compared to the original. But the one thing I liked about it was that I sucked at the real Donkey Kong, but on this, I could play and get to the Pie Factory sooner. So that's the running theme for Crazy Kong players, is that everybody likes the fact that you can get to the Pie Factory. Nobody cares that the game stinks. Everybody likes the Pie Factory.
Mary and Chris Peterson wrote in, I love your podcast. I guess so this would be Mary and or Chris Peterson. Your commentary and reviews have inspired me to finally finish my MAME cabinet. Good for you.
Nice.
I'm in the process of going through your podcast archive, so forgive me if you've already addressed this question. Which front end do you use / prefer to run your MAME cabinets? Keep up the great work. My list of games to play keeps growing by the episode. Thank you, Mary and or Chris. Rob, what do you use?
You know what? I have, gosh, what is the name of this stupid thing? Now I have to find it. It's on my other machine, but,
while you look for that, I will answer then. I found that I'm mostly actually these days a Mac guy, just for like everyday kind of work, but I still have a Windows PC for specifically this kind of thing, because for whatever reason, MAME on the Mac just sucks. Setting it up is difficult and it's ugly and the front ends are not very good, but on Windows, I use MAME UI 64, which I think is the just the standard one that's recommended from the MAME dev team. And I do have one of the one of those iCade cabinets, a little mini cabinets that you can put your iPad in. And I use, I think it's the iMAME program. There's two of them now. There's the iMAME, and there's there was a game that was released last year or the year before that it was, and I forget the name of it. It was only on the store for like a week or two, but it was an old arcade game, but they found out that what it really was a MAME program running behind this thing that just booted right into the game. So if you jailbroke your iPad and went into the file structure and loaded ROMs into the right directory, and it would instead boot into the ROM front end or the MAME front end, and you could choose the game you wanted to play.
Oh, nice.
And depending on the type of iPad you have, because the Gridley, I think, is the name of the game.
Okay. Yeah, with two E's, like Gridley, something like that. I've seen that.
Yeah, it's this really dumb game. I think the idea was that it was specifically to Trojan in a MAME game for people in the App Store.
Oh, I see. That's interesting.
But because it came out later, it uses a later version of the MAME engine. And so if you have an iPad 1 or 2, it's actually going to be worse to play with this one, because it really pounds, some of those games really pound the CPU and stuff like that. So if you have an older iPad, I would suggest, you'll need to jailbreak it, but I would suggest hunting down a copy of iMAME. And you'll need, I think, what is it, the 0.39B ROM set or something. It's a very specific ROM set that works with that, and none of the others do. But if you have a later one, like an iPad 4 or something like that, then I would get the Gridley game and use that, because it has a better engine.
Cool. Yeah, I use that same MAME UE 64 on my machine upstairs. I know a lot of people use, on cabinets, I guess Hyperspin is a really, really popular front end.
Yeah, I don't actually have a cabinet. I play on the PC and I play on the iMAME thing. So
yeah, I mentioned about four episodes ago that I was going to start building a MAME cabinet. And then I mentioned that I was going to update everyone on how that progress is going. And I thank you for not bringing it up, because the progress so far every week would be 0%.
Well, now you have some motivation to keep up with Chris and or Mary.
I do. Yeah, it's definitely something I want to get done. You know, I have that 60-in-1 cabinet, which is in our dining room, which my wife loves the fact that there's an arcade game that's all beat up. I mean, it's not not a good-looking cabinet, but I put it in there. And you turn it on, and of course, the 60-in-1s are, you know, it's hardware-based, so you're locked into just those games. So it's kind of, I mean, it has Donkey Kong, and it has, you know, Miss Pac-Man, and you know, a few classics like that. So that part of it's nice. But for something like, you know, a lot of the games that we play that are a little obscure are obviously not going to be on there.
Right.
So it's not very configurable. So that's my goal, is to finish a cabinet from the ground up. I mean, spend some time on the woodwork, spend some time on For years, I had a stereo in this car I owned that was halfway hanging out because I was putting in a new stereo. I wired it up. I pushed it in to see if everything would work. It did, and that was it. I don't even think I put the trim back around it, you know. So I'm real bad about just kind of stopping once it gets to a functional level. And seeing, you know, some of the arcade cabinets and the custom controllers and stuff that listeners have sent in, it really, you know, it's kind of inspiring to see the level of craftsmanship that people put into these. So that's what I'd like to do.
Well, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about what I would do if I actually had a cabinet, if I was building one. And it occurs to me that if you have MAME UI 64, so I assume that if you're building, like, probably the easiest way to do it, at least in my mind, would be to get a cabinet, some old beat up cabinet, kind of finish the wood, you know, and paint it up nice, and then put a PC in there and hide it behind that. And if you're going to do that, you would have to have, if you boot into MAME UI, you would need a keyboard and a mouse or some sort of pointing device to manipulate the program, because like with iMAME and Gridly on the iPad, those front ends are set up specifically so that you can use a joystick and buttons to navigate the menus and the settings and options and things, whereas MAME UI is not that way. So if you're booting in to MAME UI on your cabinet and all you have is a four-way stick and two buttons, you're probably going to have a difficult time. You know, you got to map the stick to move up and down the games list. And it sounds like a real pain in the butt to me. So I would think that choosing your front end would be an important step.
Like I said, Hyperspin, you know, so basically when you do a MAME cabinet, you don't boot into a version of MAME like that. You boot into, you know, one of these front ends, and then they, you know, so they're all set up to work with a joystick and the buttons and things like that. And then when you press it, it launches MAME, you know, kind of in the background. And one thing a lot of the front ends do is they're configurable to the point where you can launch other type of emulators. You know what? Maximus Arcade, that is the front end I have on I have a machine set up down in the living room, and it's not in a cabinet. It's a computer that's hooked up to the living room TV. And I actually, that's the one I use wireless Xbox 360 controllers on. But you boot it up and it comes up to the menu thing. I pick MAME, and then I could just pick any of the games with the controllers, you know, and then launch the games. A lot of these front ends allow you to map custom buttons to certain features. The one that I have lets you use like the player one start button almost as a shift button. So player one start might be select the game, but there's all these different things. Like you want to go back, you want to add games to your favorite list, you want to resort your games, you want to, you know, and so then you're like, oh, you got to hold down this button and press this button and joystick left and this does that, you know, so you almost need a cheat sheet on some of those. But Hyperspin, that was a big one. Game Launcher is an older one that a lot of people used to use, and it was really kind of simplified. And that's the other thing is some of them look better than others, but also some of them are a lot more difficult to set up than others. I know the one that I have, when you go through, it'll show like little screenshots of each one, but that means you have to go download screenshots of every game and put that in a folder, or the marquees and put that in a folder. There could definitely be some work in setting those things up.
I would assume that if you're setting up a cabinet like that, it would be something where you would expect to have to spend some quality time with the thing, setting it up. And then once you were done, that's kind of a set and play, and just don't go back to it unless there's a problem.
Somebody mentioned a couple of weeks ago that MAME 161 is out now. When I had my cabinet set up, and which, by the way, I got so much flack, no pun intended, for my cabinet, because my cabinet was... When I got it, it was actually a cabinet my dad had bought years ago. We had it in our house, and it had a different game in it. But originally, the cabinet was a Donkey Kong Jr. cabinet. So it was an orange Nintendo cabinet. So when I got it, the game had died, and the monitor had died. So I pulled the monitor out. And so there was really no working parts inside this thing when I got it. It was just a shell, you know. So I put a PC in there, and I didn't modify anything on the cabinet. I just, you know, used what was inside it. I mean, I used the joysticks that were there and the buttons that were there. And I thought it was really slick. You know, I wired up an iPad controller and put a different monitor in there. I was so proud of it. And I put pictures of it online, and people, I would get emails that would say, "Dear person who molested this Nintendo cabinet, I hate you. You are doing this hobby wrong."
Oh.
You don't deserve that old dead cabinet that you did something with. I mean, it was like really hate, like, you know, like you had personally gone into this person's childhood and taken something and smashed it while you were laughing, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't so long ago that, in fact, Carrington and I got into it on the air over somebody who had, he had purchased, there was an article on like The Verge or something about him. He'd spent like $30,000 on his own arcade, just buying these machines and moving them into his apartment in New York or something, and went to Kalov and went for advice, and they chewed him up and spit him out because he had destroyed some cabinets or you know, how dare you think you could, you know, we spent years learning this stuff and how dare you think you could buy your way into it. And it was kind of, they treated him kind of poorly. But yeah, there's definitely a group of gatekeepers out there that will go out of their way to make you miserable if you don't treat those machines the way that they think you should treat them. And I think that's just crap.
Yeah, it was really an eye-opener lesson for me, you know, and when you don't know anything about the hobby, which I didn't, I mean, none of us did when we started, you know, I was like, well, here's a cabinet that I got that doesn't work. So I didn't see the harm in making it work and do something else.
If you turn it into anything other than what it originally was, especially one like that, they're going to come after you, and it's not pretty. And you know, unfortunately, his mistake, and it sounds like maybe yours too, was he went on to Kalov, and it tends to be some rough country over there if you're not expecting that.
Right.
So,
no,
it doesn't justify it at all because they treated him really poorly. But that element out there does exist, and it's unfortunate, but. If you put that out there and you do something to one of these cabinets, they will write you some ugly emails, and it's just makes me sad.
No, my mistake was I was contacted by Chris Kohler, who writes for Wired, who was putting together a book called Retro Gaming Hacks, which is still out there. It was sold through O'Reilly Books. It's like a 2005 book. It's like 101 retro gaming hacks, something like that. He contacted me, and they were looking for people to submit articles. And so I submitted two or three articles about MAME and MAME cabinets. And I included pictures of my cabinet, which are in that book. So people would buy this book, and then they saw that. And I was like, I might as well just put a target outside my house. Just people drive by and throw bags of tokens at my windows, you know. So, water under the bridge.
It's all, yeah. That's still kind of the way you put it. Was kind of funny,
so. Well, let's get on. I've got some news. Let's get on to happier times here. I got some arcade news for you.
Okay.
The first thing is there's a new trailer out for a brand new game, brand new arcade game called Krautbuster, which is a new Neo Geo MVS game.
Krautbuster.
Yeah, like and so there was a lot of flack. I gotta quit saying flack. mean, there's people were complaining that the game looked very similar to Metal Slug. It kind of looked like a Metal Slug ripoff, but apparently,
well, it's Neo Geo. Everything looks like Metal
exactly.
Slug.
Exactly. The controls are more, I guess, Contra style, someone said now. So there is a new trailer out for this thing, and there's some details and videos that are coming out for this, and it looks pretty cool. I'm just glad people are still making arcade games. So, and MVS stuff. I wish I still, that's actually one cabinet I wish I'd have kept was my MVS cabinet, because I do like those type of games. And, you know, you could just buy a cartridge, you know. In fact, I had a I'd bought all these different MVS cartridges for mine, and then I found the multi-carts. There's like 101 MVS carts, so I would just leave that one plugged in, and it had 100 games on it, you know?
One of the things that we were going to do on No Quarter and never got around to when Carrington was around, just because we keep getting, like, suggestions for other games to play, I think we talked about the PC 10, the Play Choice 10. I think one of these shows coming up, I'd kind of like to do one of the other platforms. We talked about doing a bunch of different, instead of just a game, maybe we'd spend a show talking about the platform. And I could never get Carrington to play anything Neo Geo because it was too modern. But I imagine I'd have less trouble with you. So maybe we'll do that in the future.
Oh,
talk
sure.
About Neo Geo or some other, because there are a few platforms themselves that are just as interesting as the games that were played on them.
And we might talk about one of those today here in a few minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let's see. A couple other quick things. Number one is there is a new Tetris game called Tetris the Grandmaster. And it is being tested. In fact,
it's Tetris with a chess rating or something.
Well, this is funny. One of the news headlines about this game is that they may be dropping the name Tetris, even though it's quite obviously a Tetris game. But they may be dropping Tetris from the title because they are having trouble finding who the correct right owner is at this point of the name Tetris. So they're not exactly sure who to license it from. But apparently they are testing it right now, this weekend, at the Round 1 USA Arcade in Puente Hills Mall, which is, I guess that's just, Puente Hills is east of Los Angeles. Just
Yeah, I've actually been there.
Have you really?
To that mall. At the time, it wasn't a nice mall, but yeah, it was a mall.
Well, now it's a mall with a new Tetris game, so that might change your mind if you go back.
I have no intention of going back.
I can't imagine. I mean, I guess Tetris to me is so timeless that if you're going to have Tetris in your arcade, I don't see why you wouldn't just go get whatever, you know, the 1990 version or whatever of Tetris and put that in your arcade. Like, I mean, I know that they have different, slight different tweaks, you know, like, oh, well, this one you get this, or this one, you know, the things are purple instead of red or whatever, but
I know a little bit about this, and not even well enough to know names, but so it was programmed by a Russian, mm-hmm. originally by a Russian guy on a home computer platform. I forget which one he actually did it on, but somebody here in the States saw it, got a hold of him, and kind of did that. I'll secure your rights here in the States if you allow us to publish it. Those individuals here in the States were very litigious about, you know, what you could call Tetris and making anything that might look like Tetris, and there were lawsuits, but I don't know how that transferred over to arcade games and how the licensing worked on that side of the Tetris development. So it sounds like maybe that was more murky, as it often is with arcade companies.
Yeah, it must be something like that. Have you seen Ecstasy of Order?
No.
It is the documentary about the Tetris Masters, and it goes back to it's not the arcade version. I think it's all NES Tetris players, but it talks about the original Tetris World Championships and then getting those people back together. It's one of those type of stories, you know, to see, get them to play Tetris again. And of course, there's the one guy that was, you know, the lone guy that disappeared. He was so good at Tetris that he never played it again, and they're going to get him back. And, you know, so there's a little bit of injected drama, you know, like a lot of those documentaries have. But it was really good, and it made me feel really inadequate in my Tetris skills.
Well, actually, Tetris is such a popular game that the co-founder of Apple Computer is a huge fan of it, and I guess is very, very good. He used to write into Nintendo Magazine under an alias and write about and share his techniques and ask questions about how to play it. So it's this is definitely a piece of cultural history, gaming cultural history, I guess would be a way to put it.
That's interesting. Last three things for you, and they were all related, is I was just skimming headlines, and there are three new classic arcades that have opened across the country, all in the last couple of weeks here. The first one is called FTW Chicago, which is now open, which, by the way, if I ever get tired of tornadoes here in the Midwest, I'm moving to Chicago. I mean, they have so many classic arcades. Obviously, Underground Retrocade, you know, that the Namco one was at level 257 or whatever. There's, Galloping Ghost, and now this, and there's half a dozen others.
And it makes sense because that's the home of all of those pinball companies, Williams and Midway.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other ones all were based in Chicago, and most of those are not around anymore, but their legacy is these arcades that are still, some are still around and some are starting up.
Yep. So FTW Chicago now, I did see that apparently they may lean a little bit more towards modern games. There's a putt-putt course. There's some other things, but they are supposed to have some classic games. I also read that Barcade has opened another location in New Have, Connecticut. So for our listeners up in the Northeast, there's a new Barcade. And then finally, one of our listeners, Scott Meredith, told me that there is a new arcade that is open in North Ridgeville, Ohio, which I think is pretty close to Cleveland. And that is the Full Blast Arcade in North Ridgeville. And it's all classic stuff. So if you are in Chicago or Connecticut or I just say the whole state of Connecticut. I just assume if you're anywhere in Connecticut, you will be near this arcade, or in Ohio. How big can they be, folks? If you are near one of these, I'd love for somebody to go check them out and send us in a report.
Well, and if you get tired of playing the new Tetris prototype or whatever it is that they're testing out at Puente Hills Mall, and you're in the LA area, there is an arcade called 82, just the number 82. It's in downtown Los Angeles, 707 East 4th Place. I guess it's become a fairly trendy night hangout district. And in fact, Quinn was telling me about this a little while ago. She went there recently, and it's more of a sort of young adult meat market, and it's loud and very, very crowded on the nights that you would want to go. There are games there, but there are huge lines to play them. So choose wisely when you go to visit. But if you are into getting alcohol with other young people playing games and maybe scoring a date for the night or something, check out 82 in Los Angeles.
I like the fact that I would hope that it's less based on people like their looks and maybe on how good they are at the games. Like someone comes up, you know, a young, attractive lady, and she's like, listen, I saw your initials on the Karate Champ, and I was just hoping maybe you could show me how you do that, lunge kick. And I would be like, well.
I agree with you, but I don't think that's the case.
I wanted to be a hero. I wanted to be the center of attention. I wanted the glory. I wanted the fame. I wanted the pretty girls come up and say, hi. I see that you're good at centipede.
Their webpage is 82.la just 82.la, and they do have a list of the games that they have out on the floor, and some of them are the popular ones, Burger Time, Centipede, but they do have some unusual titles, Discs of Tron, the EDOT, a few other titles that I have not heard of. They got a bunch of, Quinn said that they have a bunch of really beautiful pinball games down there. So if you're into pinball, obviously we don't talk about pinball here on No Quarter, spit on pinball, but I guess if you're into that stuff, then you can go get high on that.
I'm going to be in LA in December. We're going on a cruise, and we're going to go to Hawaii so I can get to the 50th state and mark my last state off of Hawaii. It'll be the last state that I've visited. But we're going to arrive in town the day of the new Star Wars film, so I don't know that I'm going to have time to check out an arcade. Maybe when we come back from the cruise, if I'm not exhausted or whatever. And then maybe there's an arcade on the boat. You know, the last we took a cruise several years ago, and there was a terrible arcade. It was a few racing games and stuff, and I noticed everything was bolted to the ground, which is probably a good idea. Yeah, if you're on a boat.
So you're going to see Star Wars at the Chinese Man Theater, or whatever you call it now?
I don't know. The thing is, I think it's going to be opening day is the day we're going to be there, and that the ship leaves. So I don't know if I'm going to be able, like, is every place going to be sold out? Like, I mean, theaters were sold out.
I'm sure they were. You'd have to buy tickets weeks in advance.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then you probably have to pay one of your friends to camp out there and get in line.
Any listeners in Los Angeles, I am using the force on you right now. I will force choke you. Right, we've gone from the Banhammer to the Infanta Ray, and now I'm just choking.
Just force choking our listeners.
Right, there goes two right there. They just dropped off. So, all right.
Those people that like Buck Rogers and those other stupid games. Right. Bubbles, yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny? Like someone says, I can hook you up, and then I get off the plane, and there's a bunch of guys in Star Trek uniforms. They're like, okay, we got him. I've been duped again. All right. Well, speaking of being duped, what is this amazing game you had me play this week?
Oh, hey, this is one of our listener suggestions. Don't blame me for this. This is a game called, I don't know, Mall Cop or Trampoline or something. It's a game called Wall Street, and it's by Century Electronics. Released in 1982, only in Europe. I can't find a whole lot about this game on the internet. I can sort of see why, because it's kind of crappy. But you play, there's two screens, two levels. The first level is you play these firemen and they move this trampoline back and forth across the bottom of the screen as the stockbrokers throw themselves out of the window on Wall Street, and you're supposed to bounce them over to the ambulance on the other side. And then eventually you will get to the second screen, which is you running around. So the first screen is a sort of a forward looking side view, slightly 3D looking sort of down the street, Wall Street. And it's a level view. And the second screen is a top down, and you're running around these buildings and there are money bags that are just laying in the street, and you're being pursued by tanks for some reason. You have to pick up the money bags. Yeah. And that's Wall Street.
Just like the real thing. I assume Wall Street is just like this in real life. When I just glanced at this online, this game, the first level, I thought that this was going to be a clone of Kickman. I mean, the first level, obviously it's not the same code, but when you look at it, it has that exact same view and perspective where you're looking down a street with skyscrapers or buildings down the street, you know, and you're looking down. And then the second level almost reminded me of like the tank level of Tron, except for like more terrible-ish. Much more terrible-ish. So yeah, you on the first level, like you said, you've got these two firemen. You control the firemen. They have a little trampoline between them, and you can move left or right, you know. And so these guys, they kind of reminded me of Pitfall Harry. They just have green shirts and
they're way out of proportion of the firemen too, as far as like the
size. Oh yeah, they're games. Like little tiny leprechauns almost that have been leaping out of the Wall Street out of the building, and there's
I don't know how these emergency techs actually drive that ambulance because they're way too big to fit in there.
It's like a clown car thing. There's a Dow Jones index at the top or at the bottom of the first level that's counting down. And I assume if that hits the very bottom, I guess I never even got anywhere close to running out of time. That's not what killed me.
Here's the thing. So if it gets down to zero, that's when you move to the next level. So what happens is as you bounce one of these little guys, they all jump out of the left building, the leftmost building. It's a black building with blue windows. They all come out of there, and the angle that they come out and the speed, that's sort of your catch. And it's similar to Tetris, wherein like the closer to the edge of the trampoline that they hit, the more angled the next bounce is and makes it more difficult to catch them. But the way that the Dow Jones index fills back up is you successfully bounce these stockbrokers into the ambulance, and it keeps popping it back up. And if you don't, that then it drains down to zero. And when it gets to zero, you move to level two.
I saw the thing on the bank, you know, going up, like the levels going up each time I got a guy to the ambulance.
It actually goes up if you drop a guy too.
Oh,
it's just, it goes up. It's just a different color.
So it just keeps going up.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not really sure how. I couldn't figure out how you would lose the game on level one. On level two, you can, because you get shot by tanks for some reason. and that's where I always died. But on level one, I don't know that you can actually lose the game. You get 100 points for each bounce on the trampoline. And I guess that's sort of where the bar comes into play. If you didn't have that bar scrolling across the bottom of the screen, it also acts as a timer where you could just bounce up 100. You get 100 points for each bounce. You just sit there forever and just run the score up. You get 1,000 points for successfully bouncing one of these brokers into the ambulance.
So like, you know, any paddle type game like Pong or anything like that, you know, whatever angle the ball comes down at, if you hit in the middle of the paddle, it returns up at that same angle. But on a lot of those games, if you hit near the edge of the paddle, it'll go off at a more extreme angle. And so if you're not careful, you can bounce the guy clear past the ambulance or off the screen to the left, at which point that guy's just gone and then another guy jumps. And so...
Yeah, you don't lose a guy. You don't lose a life if you drop one of these brokers. So I don't know that there's not much incentive because there's no punishment for dropping one other than that you don't drive the index back up. The Dow Jones index doesn't go up. The little timer bar goes down to zero.
The eventually. Understatement of this episode is that there's not much incentive to go forward. But now I did read online that when you see the helicopter, if you press the button, you can super launch your guy and hit the helicopter. I never saw a helicopter, and I never had anything that would remotely allow me to do anything like that. Maybe that comes much later.
It's just the two alternating levels, so it goes back and forth between the guys throwing themselves out of the building and then you running around avoiding tanks and picking up money bags. The money bags level was a little bit more confusing for me. I had to watch some people play it online to figure out what was going on there, because there's a dearth of information of written articles about like how you play and secrets and stuff like that. So you can pick up these bags, but you can only pick up, I think, like two. And then you're like, well, what do I do with this? Well, down at the bottom of the screen, there's like an area, I guess, where you drop the bags off and then you can go pick up more. And as you're doing it, it becomes a game of attrition, because the tanks just keep generating and there are more and more of them. And eventually they will get you. You do fire a couple of shots. They're sort of short limit. They're limited distance shots. You have to be in kind of close to the tanks, but the tanks are stupid, so it's easy to shoot them. And then you're back on level one again. And I don't really understand.
Well, it took me a couple times to figure out what to do in the second level, the maze level. I got the money. There's a money bag, and I got that. And then I saw another money bag, and I went and I couldn't get it, you know. And I was like, well, I must. Then it clicked. Okay, I must drop the first money bag somewhere. And then I saw the little bank vault, so I put it in there. I don't think this might not be accurate as to what happens on Wall Street. I'm not entirely sure. Like, I did watch.
You just think they get chased around by tanks sometimes?
I don't remember Michael Douglas. Wasn't he in Wall Street, the movie? I don't remember tanks so much. I was confused when I could and couldn't shoot, because at the very beginning of the second level, if you just stand still, the tanks come to your area and kill you. So I figured out that's not a good plan. So then you wait till one goes left and the other one's coming from the right, and you kind of split the middle and go up. And then I got to a point where I was at a dead end. I thought, I've got to be able to shoot them. And so I did. I shot one. And I was like, awesome. And I went and got money and put it in the thing. And then another tank approached me. And I said, okay, I'll shoot him. And then I couldn't shoot him. So I never really figured out. There's some logic that I'm missing that maybe you could only shoot under certain circumstances or only so many times or something. I'm not really sure. But what I did know is that my guy attacks tanks like nobody's business. I mean,
he probably shoots some tanks too. Yeah. I did play enough on the second level to figure out that you get two shots and then you have to visit the vault. And when you do that, that drops your money bags off, which means A, you can pick up more bags, and B, you have two more shots to take at the tanks.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's just it's an endless game. There's no end to it other than you just die of boredom.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was an end to me playing it, and it wasn't too long after I started it.
there's an excellent blog out there that we've talked about a lot on this show, called The Golden Age Arcade Historian, and the website is actually allincolorforaquarter.blogspot.com. And he has an article dated January 11th, 2014, if you're looking through his archives, where he talks about the history of Century Electronics and CVS, and there is a short mention of the game Wall Street here, not much other than that I guess there was a company called Toonie, T-U-N-I, that produced some of their games, or they had a deal with them, and they ended up, there was a lawsuit over copyright infringement and revenues, and Century sued Toonie, I don't know how you pronounce it, and Wall Street was one of the games that they were sued over. But other than that, I can't find a whole lot about the history of this thing.
Yeah, there's really not much out there. I found that same article you did. I found a little bit more, you know, about the company and the history of that, and about the hardware. And I want to talk about the sound, and I think the sound will probably lead you into a discussion about the hardware. But I was surprised right off the bat to find out that this game has some digitized speech in it.
I don't think I heard that.
You didn't? Well, maybe
I don't remember hearing it.
Maybe that was the tranks that I was thinking. No, when I fired it up, it said game online or something like that. And
yeah, mine didn't do that.
Oh, yeah.
Although I got a message on mine that tells you, you know, so MAME, if you leave the setting at default, will tell you if a game isn't emulated properly, and mine popped up and said the sound isn't working 100%. So maybe I have an older copy of the ROM. I don't know.
Huh? Yeah. Well, it definitely had digitized little sounds, and whenever you would get the money bags, he would.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, he had a little digitized voice thing there. So it's not like I would go, well, this game sucks, and then that would change my mind. Like you're like, oh, well, did you hear when you coined up it said something? Then I would go, oh, no.
As far as hardware, and this is sort of surprising, although, all right, we'll talk about this first. The specifics are that it has three S2650 chips. I don't even know who makes those. All three of them are clocked at 894 kilohertz, kind of slow. It also has three Signetics 2636. I guess Signetics made those chips. Sound chips, it has a speaker and three DACs and a TMS 5100 at 640 kilohertz for the sound. So a whole lot of sound hardware there. And the video is 240 by 248 vertical. And it's kind of a weird game.
Yeah. So the...
That's just one of the hardware specs, weird game.
That's a toggle switch that they left turned on. That's the one of the dip switch settings. Do you want odd or crappy? and it's stuck somewhere in the middle. Well, I assume that you read about how this is was built on CVS hardware, which is similar to Neo Geo and PC-10 and those other type of formats that basically it makes it a multi-game system. So, you know, maybe that's why it had all those different chips, because I can't imagine that this game is using that much processing power.
This one, no. But I did read that E.T. also ran on this hardware, so maybe that's where all the power went.
Maybe
it was released in 1982 at the AMOA show in November, so late in 82.
There's some pictures of the board out there, and it used cartridges. So that was similar to, I guess, Deco would have been. I think you guys probably talked about that way back, like with Burger Time and stuff, you know, with they were using cassette technology for those, right? And so this was a cartridge thing, and their whole business model was they were going to sell these cartridges for, like, you know, less than $300 a game, and they said they were going to come out with games every 6 weeks.
Wow.
So, right. So they actually had a group of in-house developers.
Shovelware.
Like, yeah, exactly. 10 or 12 guys that were going to be developing games. And so there are a bunch of games. But this is a bad sign right here, McGinnis. It says, you know, the most popular game on the hardware was Hunchback. And I went, what?
Oh, no.
Right. So that was – so everything else is going to be downhill from Hunchback. but skimming through, you know, all these games, I think it's mostly the ones that are listed on that the website that you mentioned, like Dark Warrior, Cosmos is one, and a lot of them are clones or ripoffs, you know, of other type of games. I mean, there's a Space Fortress, which I think is the one that's similar to Asteroids. One of their games is similar to Astro Blaster, you know. So they had a lot of games that were just like clones of other types of games.
Well, I'll give them that. This is not much a clone of anything that I can think of.
No, this one, and that was their problem, is when they got into the original games, it went downhill. There is one called Logger, which is a clone of Donkey Kong. It's almost exactly like Donkey Kong, except for up at the top, instead of a giant donkey, there's just this giant bird. I mean, it's still throwing I think it's logs instead of barrels, but it looks just like Donkey Kong, except for at the top, you know.
Piles of bird poop.
But
because that's what that game is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And you know what? This is how bad this system is. Crazy Kong looks so much better than this silly Logger game. But yeah, so that was their...
This one didn't look too great either.
No, you know, this era of arcade games, things change so fast. If you go in the mid-90s and you were like, well, this game was 94 and this game was 95, you're not going to see a huge difference. But the difference between games in 80 and 81 was a huge leap, and 81 and 82 is another big leap, you know. So this game is 82.
Late 82.
Yeah, it looks like more like a maybe 80, something like that. I mean, it looks like a really early game.
Yeah. It doesn't look like a whole lot of effort went into this, which when you're telling me that they were trying to crank out a new game every 6 weeks, doesn't really surprise me. There was another game that we played and I can't remember what it was, but it felt like it was, like leftover IP from other games that wasn't used. And the company said, well, we've got all this stuff. We'll just throw it into this other game and hope that something comes out of it. And it didn't. And I think that this feels a lot like that, where, okay, well, we have a trampoline bouncy thing and that's kind of cool. There's firemen. People like firemen, right? And there's tanks and we shoot at stuff. And there's sort of a maze aspect to level two, you know, where you're, because as you're making your way through the city, it's sort of, you know, just a one level high, I guess, if you want to call it that, passage for you and the tanks chase you. But it's certainly a maze chase kind of a thing. It feels like there were a whole lot of elements they had left over from some of these other game development projects. Maybe something didn't get finished and they thought, oh, this is a neat idea. We can put it in another game. And somebody went, well, we've got this pot of stew over here. Just throw that in and we'll see what comes out the other end.
I wonder, when I was playing this, now you said this is a European-only release, is that right?
Yeah, this was actually developed by Century Electronics, but it was Century Electronics UK, the UK branch.
Okay.
And they worked with Toonie, I guess Toonie Electro Service or something like that. But apparently it was never released outside, probably because of that lawsuit with Toonie.
Oh, okay.
So,
So I wondered if there would have been more of an uproar, like when I think about like games like Death Race, you know, which were literally where it's a black and white game and you run over stick figures. I mean, it's the least gory game. I'm sure there are more violent Pokemon games at this point than Death Race, right. You know? But I wonder if there would have been more of an uproar about this game of, well, you know, Wall Street guys trying to jump out of the building or whatever.
I would think that you would see that here in the States, because we tended, especially in the early 80s, to be a little bit more, you know, nanny state about that sort of stuff. And, oh, must protect the children, you know. and Europe has always been a little bit more relaxed about, okay, come on, guys, we know this is a game. Everybody relax. It's not a big deal. So if it were over here in the States, yeah, probably. I don't really see any articles at all about this other than the couple that it's mostly just been mentions or a brief, like, here's what the game is. So yeah, I can't find a lot about the history of Wall Street. Most of the game description sites have like released ?
Right.
copy of ? You know, that sort of thing. So yeah, I don't know.
I'm wondering, I don't know that we captured who submitted this game, but I'm wondering if they're still listening, and if you're not, damn you for suggesting this and then not listening. But I would like to know, you know, if it was a listener from possibly overseas, somebody that played this, you know, in the UK or whatever, because I never heard of this. I never heard of the platform. I don't think I've heard of any of the games that were on the list. So I would be curious as to if you were a based here in the US, how you would even find out about this game.
Well, one thing that you haven't experienced, I guess, yet here on No Quarter, Rob, is that our listeners like to troll us with the games. They find the worst of the worst of the worst and say, here, play this, guys. You'll love it. And I think this may be one of those titles.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Thanks for doing this to us.
All right. Well, did you at least find anything interesting about the cabinet?
Well, if by interesting you mean they were completely plain white, then sure.
Awesome.
They were, in fact, all the ones that were on that system look exactly the same. They are a white arcade cabinet. And then on the side, there was a circle sticker that says Toonie. And I guess that's what they put this multi system in. So that's what they look like. They also, some of the games, I guess, also have a cabaret version. And they are completely wood paneled on the sides and on the top, with no graphics. So your choice is a white cabinet or a block of wood. That's what you get.
Well, I don't imagine there are a lot of these for sale.
No, I couldn't find, you know, I found the, that base system, the CVS, motherboard, you know, for, around $100. I think I saw one for $139 that's for sale right now. I've seen them sell for $100. The trick in anything like that is finding the cartridges. I'm sure, you know, and those I didn't see any for sale right now. So that might be a little bit more difficult if you're wanting to find a specific game for this system. That's might cost you more money.
All right. Well, that was easy, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sure, you know, like the Deco and like those other systems, they saw that arcade operators didn't want to pay, you know, the going rate, whatever, $3,000 or $5,000 or whatever, for new machines every few months, you know. So coming up with an idea, you know, any type of system where you could change games out quickly and inexpensively, and $300 a game, that's a good deal, you know. Unfortunately, I mean, this is the type of quality that they were putting out, so you could see why the company didn't last very long, lawsuits or not.
There's a brief thread on the arcade-museum.com about, not about Wall Street, but about Toonie, and somebody posts that there was, I guess, a video from a 1982 trade show that had an interview with a Toonie sales rep showing how these cabinets worked, and that you talked about, Rob, how this was a cartridge swap-in, swap-out system, showing how these worked. They used a glass stand-up cabinet to show how easy it was to interchange the boards. The rep being interviewed tried her best, but the interviewer asked at the end why the screen was upside down. She was caught off guard and just said it was for two players. It looks like they brought a cocktail PCB to show instead of something for.
Oh, no.
So you can kind of see the quality of the company that maybe you're dealing with here.
Yeah. You know what? There was a, this is semi-related, but there was a arcade museum that was in St. Louis. And by the time I found out about it, it was gone. And if you Google that, they have pictures of a Miss Pac-Man cabinet that they actually made out of either glass or plexiglass. So you could see everything that was inside that. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think, well, that, what a great idea to, if you're showing off your system, you know, to show what it would look like. And I'll have to go dig up that video you mentioned, because I'd love to see that. And plexiglass is so much more fragile and difficult to work with if you don't have the right tools. Or, I mean, really, I only have, you know, a hammer and a bigger hammer. So that's my two tools. So I'm not going to be able to build anything out of plexiglass. But I always thought that would make a really neat arcade cabinet. So that's cool that they did that.
Of course, nobody's really going to notice that if you install the wrong board in your cabinet. Upside down,
yeah. There is, if you Google, I think I just Googled like Wall Street in quotes and arcade cabinet and things like that. And there's a picture, and I think it's on that same URL. I think it goes back to that, but it's a picture of just like, oh, probably a row, like two rows of 20 or 30 of these arcade cabinets. And that you'll see they all are identical. They're all white, and they all just have that little circle, you know, on the side, and
generic and bland.
Yeah. That's good and bad, because at the time, I'm sure they saw that from the perspective of, well, you can, you know, switch them in and out and turn them into other games, which is good. But if you think about every arcade, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, you were looking for, you know, those machines that stood out, you know, the joystick or the flight yoke on the front of a Star Wars arcade cab, or the ghetto blaster that stuck up on the top of a 720 cab, or, you know, any of those type of games, that something that set those machines apart from the rest. And so marketing your entire system on a completely white cabinet, I'm sure it just blended right in.
I guess if you set up a row of them and they all look the same and people go, wow, that's really a row of plain white arcade games, it would stand out, sort of.
I guess so.
All right. So how'd you do?
I got to whatever the first level is the second time. So maybe level three, mm-hmm. I guess. And I got 36,100. I got to a point where when the guys were jumping out of the building, like they would start jumping two at a time, and right, it was just physically impossible for me to catch both guys. And I thought, I swore that was killing me or whatever. Maybe, you know, now you're saying that that doesn't take a life away or whatever, but it seemed like I died. So okay. I'll have to go back and look. But
maybe I was just playing it wrong.
I don't know, but you know, we were joking earlier where you said there wasn't much incentive or whatever. And there are a lot of games, you know, Mr. Do comes to mind that we just played not too long ago. And Mr. Do, as we set aside a week to play these games, then we move on to the next one. And I would say, okay, you know, I'm going to give myself half an hour for Mr. Do Monday and half an hour Tuesday. Every night I went over on those times, you know, like I would keep playing that game. And I have played Mr. Do since we did that episode. So, you know, it's a game that I have gone back. I mean, it's something that I've added to. There was nothing on this game, not only that, I mean, obviously I try to put the best foot forward, you know, for our friendly competition, but you know, there's not like tomorrow, I'm not going to be like, well, we're done with that episode, but I'm going to go back for one more round of Wall Street. You know, really, I enjoyed watching them die. As each one hit the ground, I thought that's what you get for being in this game. How'd you do? Yeah,
that did occur to me that, you know, maybe Century could have picked a more likable damsel in distress character to save than Wall Street. Well, that's a stockbroker.
Right, that's another thing is that they kind of already have this, I don't know, reputation of not being likable type people, you know, so... Yeah, I don't know. I didn't feel so bad when I wish they'd had more of a comic splat. You know what I mean? Like a
yeah, there wasn't a lot of that. The sound wasn't for as much sound as there was. It wasn't great. Like the tanks just kind of have this little bit sound.
Right, right.
And when they would fire at you or you would do something else, that sound would stop and then it would start again. So there wasn't like multi-layered sound going on there. Like the sound would play until something else played, and then that would pause, and we would play whatever sound we needed to, and then we would go back to the sound that was happening before.
Yeah.
Which was really kind of unpleasant. And they ramped up the difficulty just by adding more jumpers and speeding them up a little bit, and then speeding up the tanks, which for me, for whatever reason, I respond well to this kind of thing. It's why I do well in games like Tetris and Breakout and things like that. So I ended up with 101,400 points.
Holy cow.
I think I got through like 6 or 7 rounds and I quit because I was bored.
Wow. Yeah. So, you know, so maybe those people falling or splatting or whatever, I'll have to go back and retry that one more time. But yeah, I just, this was one of those games where I thought, well, I put in the time for the show, I played it, and I'm already looking forward to, you know, picking something else. It's just, I don't know. If I saw this at an arcade, I would be like, well, that looks interesting, and I would drop a quarter in it, and I would play it, and I would go, well, what's next? You know, I would not, I probably wouldn't drop 2 quarters in this thing.
All right, well, what is next, Rob?
Well, it is not the sound of people jumping out of buildings. Instead, it sounds like this.
All right. Well, as you were playing that sound, I was actually thinking, you know, that if I had dropped a quarter into Wall Street, I would then go to the arcade operator and demand my money back. It's boring and dumb.
I think you would do better to just invest the quarter into Wall Street, like actually buy a quarter's worth of stocks.
I like penny stocks. Probably right. It would have been more fun. That's for sure.
Don't buy it in this company.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, next week's game will definitely, it might not be better because, you know, you guys like to troll us. And it's your own damn fault when we have to talk about crap games like this.
If it's worse, I'm jumping out the window myself.
I'll be right behind you.